Chapter 7. Mother. It had been 3 days since the execution. Lucy's lesions were spreading, radiating across her torso. She was feeling weaker and knew the dizziness would start soon. It was only a matter of days before the lesions spread to her hands and face. She found herself craving the fermented leaves and had to force down her fish and corn meals to keep up appearances. It was impossible to leave the company of others without arousing suspicion. Shona, who doted on her with great affection, was by her side almost every hour of the day and had been proudly introducing her to the rest of the community one by one. There was simply no way for Lucy to seek out medicine without arousing suspicion, and time was running out. She'd spent the past 3 days rotating through various chores that kept the community running. As a newcomer, her scope was limited to basic tasks, from fetching water to preparing food, repairing garments and stoking fires. She knew there were research teams, but they were chemists and engineers, urgently trying to figure out a viable fuel source now that the city's gasoline had all but run dry. She'd spoken to a couple of them over dinner. They were trying to convert the building's generator to run off biomass, but the prototype so far had been unsuccessful. Nonetheless, each professed their commitment to restore mankind to its technologized glory in the name of the Lord. Knowledge was a gift from above, after all, and it was their duty to preserve that gift and ensure it was used. To do otherwise, they argued, would be to disrespect her will. The preacher was absent. His prayers had instructed him to conduct a hunt for sinners in the western outskirts of the city. He'd taken a team of volunteers and veterans, declaring that they would penetrate further than before and comb through the streets over several days. The hunting party was expected back the following evening. Shona had chosen to share a secret with Lucy on the first night of the preacher's absence. She was pregnant with his child. Shona could barely contain her excitement, which made up for Lucy's emotionally stunted response. Shona insisted that she didn't want to tell anyone else, especially not the preacher, until another month had passed, just so she could be sure. But she felt certain and was convinced it would be a girl. The period of the preacher's absence was marked by tranquility. Masses were held in his absence, led by devout members from preacher's original farming community. There was no dissent. The community regulated itself with incredible calm and dignity. Disputes were settled by a senior cleric who would arbitrate in the preacher's absence. Violence was unnecessary because the residents were all there by choice and were equally invested in the success of the community. March 7th, estimated. The people here are showing me immense kindness. I have quickly seen the love between them and the peace they're striving for. Through the preacher's wisdom, I hope the Lord rids us of the plague in the city and that the souls of those affected are redeemed through her justice. Lucy had taken to writing fictitious entries in her diary, lest anyone from the community read her notes. The community was awash with smiles, kindly words, and hawkish eyes. It was imperative they believed Lucy was faithful if she was going to survive. She couldn't risk anyone calling her into question and a religious court demanding to inspect her skin. Similarly, she'd amended any diary entries referring to her use of white powder by rewriting them obliquely so that they would only make sense to her. The community had almost 2,000 members spread across several buildings around McKinley Square. Each building had its own responsibilities for maintaining cleanliness and order, as well as additional specialist functions within the community. Lucy had helped Shona deliver stationery to the school, which operated out of 2 small conference rooms. The faithful school was comprised of 2 classes, roughly divided into elementary and middle school ages. High school students were allowed to attend in the mornings only, then were required to work in the afternoons and evenings. An ex-teacher and several assisting adults attempted to educate children across all subjects, using their own knowledge and scavenged textbooks. Lucy observed one of these classes being taught, recent history, which ensured that all children remembered or learned of human civilization as it was in the year of the Great Collapse, as they called it. They covered the medical milestones mankind had reached, the incredible opportunities the internet and smart technology had brought, and encouraged children to share memories they had of devices they'd used. The community's core beliefs were woven throughout the curriculum, that mankind had grown arrogant, and that the Great Collapse was a punishment from above. It was jarring for Lucy to see them discuss the initial epidemic and the collapse of the satellites with a great deal of scientific accuracy, only for them to infuse a narrative of supernatural punishment throughout it. She couldn't deny the motivational element, though, the mantra that they were all chosen survivors, specially selected by the Lord to rebuild mankind from the ashes, proved highly effective. It permeated the whole community. Depression and despair were scant. The bustling district was marked by a sense of optimism, purpose, and hope. In the evenings, for leisure, the community would provide entertainment from their pool of human talent. On any one night, there were musicians, storytellers, crafters, and dancers. Lucy heard the epic tale of the banishing of the cannibals told by two different storytellers. The number of cannibals killed varied widely between the renditions, but one detail was consistent: the heroic intervention of the preacher and the survivors' gratitude to the Lord for sending him. March 7th. Retiring to bed early again, exhausted after another hard day's work. Shona made me laugh today. I didn't think any good could come from losing Mom, but Shona's the exception. The community here is incredibly positive and nurturing. I'm still adjusting to it. It's not what I've come to expect from life since the Great Collapse. Hot food, comfortable bedding, clean clothes, even a candle to read by. The engineering team were telling me they've scavenged some photovoltaic cells and are planning on rigging them up for the church and canteen. Their commitment to getting us back on track is inspiring. Were it not for the exhaustion, I think I would be happy here. The exhaustion was, of course, code for the increasing severity of her symptoms, or the scourge, as the faithful called it. She reflected on her brief entry. To her astonishment, she meant it all. She wondered if, were she not infected, she would have been willing to overlook the barbarism of the faithful's attitude to the diseased. Perhaps she would have wholly embraced the psychological and physical comforts the community had to offer. For better or worse, the question was moot. Her condition was worse than ever. The disease was progressing rapidly, and she'd been forced to seek out seated laboring tasks to mask her bouts of dizziness. Her dry, paling complexion was harder to hide, however, and it was only a matter of time before the lesions breached her neckline. A blinding pain woke Lucy, wrenching her from an uneasy slumber. Moonlight shone through a slit in her bedroom curtains. She staggered to the bathroom in agony, clutching her abdomen. It felt swollen. Standing before the mirror in the pale, reflected glow of the moon, she lifted her nightshirt. Her belly button had vanished. Covering her abdomen was a lump the size of a foot. The covering skin looked red raw. With great trepidation, she pressed her digits upon the swollen area. The flesh molded around her fingers. She recoiled in horror, but the motion ripped away the waxy skin from her midriff. She screamed in pain, then stifled her mouth. She stared downwards. There was no bleeding. The skin that remained was infused with purple. It darkened the closer you got to the center, where the biggest growth was. It throbbed. Lucy felt her hand being drawn to the area magnetically. She grabbed a washcloth and bit down on it. She took several rapid breaths, then pushed her fingers into her malformed abdomen. With a muffled scream, she pierced her own waxy flesh. Her fingertips reached the dark object inside, and she wrenched it from her body. She dropped the mass to the floor. It was a lifeless human fetus. She screamed in horror and recoiled from the room, pressing herself up against the far wall of the bedroom. Her hands trembled with adrenaline, glistening with flecks of her gelatinous liquid flesh. Her regular abdomen was unaffected, but the ruptured remains of the reddish-purple growth hung from her body, like an externalized amniotic sac. The bedroom door burst open and Shona rushed in, holding a lantern. "Lucy, are you okay?" she asked, setting the lantern on the counter and wrapping her sister in a comforting embrace. "I thought someone had hurt you," she soothed. Shona followed Lucy's eyes to the lifeless pink form in the bathroom. She gasped in horror, looking from the fetus to Lucy. She wrenched Lucy's nightshirt up, revealing the ruptured, unnatural flesh. "Sinner!" cried Shona, her eyes filled with fear. "Sinner!" Shona repeated, shouting this time. Lucy clamped a trembling hand over her sister's mouth. "Shh, shh, please. I can explain this." "I'm not a sinner, please, just be quiet," begged Lucy. But Shona was petrified and continued to wail, her cries muffled only by Lucy's hand. Shona kneed Lucy in the stomach and scrambled to her feet. "Help! Sinner! Sinner!" cried Shona as she lunged for the door, but Lucy leapt upon her, pinning her to the floor. A wave of renewed strength surged through her body. Shona scratched at Lucy's face and kicked with all her might while Lucy fought to keep her pinned. "Sinner! You're going to hell! Your soul must be cleansed!" spat Shona with terror in her eyes. "Shona, please listen to me," grunted Lucy as they rolled violently to the side, knocking into the table. The lantern fell to the floor and smashed. The oil flame spilled out of the glass cage and onto the bedsheets. "Stone the sinner! Stone her!" groaned Shona as she clawed her way towards the door, trying to kick Lucy away. Lucy put a knee into Shona's back. They rolled again, tussling across the smoldering floor. Lucy clambered on top of Shona. She pinned her sister against the floor and covered her mouth, but Shona forced her hand away and continued her cries. Lucy grabbed Shona's throat in both hands and squeezed with her newfound strength. "Listen to me. I'm sick. Just let me go. I won't come back, but please, please, you mustn't tell the others. You know what they'll do to me," implored Lucy. Shona's eyes were glazed. She looked at Lucy like she'd never met her before in her life and kept repeating one single rasping word. "Sinner!" Lucy tightened her hands around Shona's neck and squeezed as hard as she could. Her sister's eyes bulged, her legs flailed and kicked wildly as the last air drained from her lungs. With a final utterance of "Sinner!" she fell limp and her head lolled to the side. Lucy fell to the ground in exhaustion, but had no time to recover. The bed was ablaze, and the flames had spread to the curtains. She stumbled over Shona's body. She thrust her notebooks into her backpack, grabbed an armful of essential clothes, and fled the room. She dashed to the emergency stairwell. She pulled on the clothes, then raced down the stairs as cries of alarm echoed out from her floor as the incident was discovered. She hurtled down the 15 floors, jumping 5 steps at a time until she reached the bottom. Panting, she drew her coat around her, creasing up in pain as her damaged secondary abdomen pulsated. The brief surge of strength was fading. She could feel her limbs weakening. Dizziness was crashing down upon her. Shouts echoed from atop the stairwell. Groaning in pain, she kicked open the exit and stumbled out into the night.